So my opening story today is about this young man in his mid to late 30s who one day bumps into an old college friend of his, and his college friend says, "Hey, how's it going? Did you settle down? Do you have a family at this point?" And the young man says, "No, I'm still single." And his friend says, "Boy, I'm so surprised, because we all agreed in college that if anybody was the marrying kind, it would be you. Didn't you ever find the right girl?" And he said, "Actually, to tell you the truth, there were several ladies that I really liked and cared for, but every time I brought them home to meet my parents, my mother didn't like them." So his friend thought about it and said, "There's only one thing you could do here. You have to find a woman that is really very, very much like your mother. As much like your mother as could possibly be." And they part company, and then they end up meeting again several months later. And his friend says, "Hey, how's it going? Did you take my advice? Did you find a woman that was exactly like your mom? And how did it go?" And the young man said, "Actually, I did find a lady that was incredibly just like mom, but I had to break up with her." And his friend said, "Why? Didn't your mom like her?" And he says, "Oh, yeah, mom just loved her." And he said, "Well, then what's the problem?" He said, "Dad couldn't stand her." Our topic today is we are family. And weeks ago, when Reverend Jan and I were plotting out the talk titles for the following weeks, and we came to June 24th, which was going to be my week, and this voice within my head said, "We are family." And so I blurted it out, "We are family," not appreciating, not realizing how it could be tied in a very special way this week in view of everything that we've been hearing and saying in the news this past week. We all have a notion about what family is. We all have a notion in terms of what family is about. We all have a set idea about what family is supposed to be. And when it comes to family, some of us have family experiences that are warm and positive and supported and loving. For others of us, perhaps not so much. But regardless, we are all taught at a very early age that family is very important, and it's very important for us to hold family with great respect and value, even if our own particular experiences haven't been all that positive. And there's an instinctive aspect to family. You see this play out in the animal kingdom all of the time. The past couple of springs, a robin has decided to set up a nest right above the light just outside of our front door. And then she goes off into a neighboring tree and stands guard. And if somebody comes up the walkway that she's not sure about, she dive bombs them in order to protect the nest. Puppies and kittens and cats are quick to defend and protect their litters. Animals of all kinds, lions, tigers, bears, they'll do just about everything they have to do to protect their young cubs. My favorite are the penguins, because the father sits with the yet-to-be-hatched egg while mom goes off in search for food for the family. And as far as human beings are concerned, it happens there as well. So I know of several cases of children that have been adopted into very wonderful, loving homes, and they have been accepted as full children and siblings, as part of the family. And yet they have this urge deep down inside to someday go off and try to find out who exactly were their biological parents. And yet, even in the best of families, there's always at least some element of dysfunction. I know this was the case in my situation. And frequently when people invite me, "Tell me a little bit about your family. What was your family like?" I always like to start off by saying, "Well, my brother was an only child," which is almost completely false. But the fact of the matter is, I'm the fourth of five children. And age-wise, we were pretty spread out, so it just didn't work out that we spent a lot of time interacting and doing things with one another. And so I share with you that Thanksgiving has always been my favorite holiday because it was our Thanksgiving Day and Thanksgiving alone. It was the single time throughout the entire year that we actually sat down and shared a meal together in my family. It just didn't happen the other 364 days of the year, not even on significant holidays like Christmas. I guess we didn't look much like the Waltons or the Brady Bunch, but that's just the way it was. My brother was 5 years older than I was, and he would routinely beat me up. We'd be sitting around watching television, and he'd get up, stretching you on, and say, "I'm going to come over there and kick your beep." And I'm, "Why? I didn't do anything." And he says, "I can use the exercise, and I can do it." And he did it. And then he warned me, "You say one word and rat me out to Mom and Dad, and you're going to pay for it like you can't believe next time." When things got tough or problems came upon us, though, we stuck together. One very hot summer night when I was a kid, the kids in the neighborhood opened up the fire hydrant. And it was one of those nights in Chicago where it was dark and still 90 degrees and humid. And my dad just wanted to cool off. So he rolled up his pants legs, he took off his shoes and socks, and he placed them on the window ledge of the apartment building behind where the fire hydrant was. And whoever lived in that apartment came along and didn't like this, so he picked up those shoes and socks and he tossed them into the water. All heck broke loose. There was a major altercation, and the police actually were called. And after a confrontation with Dad, Dad was arrested. They gave him a seat in the patrol wagon. When my oldest sister saw this, she went absolutely ballistic and berserk, and she got into the faces of those police officers, and she read them the riot act like you could never believe, filled with all kinds of profanity and frequent mentions to their ancestry. So they said, "You know what? Go take a seat next to your father." True stories. We were corpons. And again, our age differences were such that there wasn't a whole lot of interaction. But we did do things that we suspect probably existed in other families as well. We were jealous of one another. We fought with one another. We argued with one another. We played all kinds of tricks on one another. And we actually plotted and schemed with detailed plans on how to get even with one another. I woke up one morning when I was about 10 years old, very early in the morning for some reason, and I had a squirt gun. So I quietly went into the bathroom, and I filled that squirt gun up. And then with the stealth of a Navy SEAL, I crawled on my belly to where my brother was sleeping, and I let him have it. And then I quickly ran back to my bed and pretended to be sleeping. I didn't hear anything. So I got back out of bed, and this time I made my way to my sister's bedroom, pushed the door open, and and again, I didn't hear anything as I went back to bed and pretended to be asleep. So I decided, I'm going to push my luck here, and I returned back to where my brother was sleeping, and again, I let him have it. Only this time, he let out a screaming yell, "Mom, somebody's squirting me!" Which, of course, resulted in my sister breaking out laughing hysterically, and the two of them got into a big fight, and I returned to my bed, and I was just sleeping angelically. But they weren't stupid. They put two and two together, and they came and they got me, and my brother just about drowned me with what was left in that squirt gun. But again, through it all, we were corpons. And I could sit down with you for hours and share and relate all kinds of stories with you, some of which I guarantee you, you absolutely would not believe. But see, this is the inherent nature of family. There is this precious bond that can never be severed or broken. Even when a family member mistreats another family member or tries to put separation between themselves and other people in the family. I know many of you have children that no longer reside in the Chicago area. They are perhaps hundreds of miles away. And even if the case were to deteriorate and they didn't even wish to speak to you or talk to you ever again, it would never change the reality that they are your children and that you are their parents. And likewise, if we had siblings that just decided to move literally to the other side of the world and openly professed that they didn't want to have a thing to do with us anymore, it would not change the reality that we would remain on some level brothers and sisters. I believe that this is the basis of the outrage that we witnessed in our country this past week. We watched and we listened to the news, and we were in disbelief and horror that our country would try to break that special bond that exists between parents and children by separating them. And then the thought that this could be used as a tactic to promote a political agenda just resulted in a natural reaction of repulsion and an outrage significant enough that it actually did serve to turn things around. People, friends, there's a lesson to be learned here. And unfortunately and sadly, it's still the case that hundreds of children remain separated from their parents, and hopefully they will be reunited. But at least for now, the practice of what was going on has been stopped. There's an old expression that blood is thicker than water. In some real sense, this is something we sign on to. This is something we subscribe to. So you probably at some point have heard somebody said, you know what? First thing first, my first obligation is to think about my family. And whenever somebody says that, there's no counter argument to that. There's no yes, but. That is just something that automatically is something that we just honor and protect. There's this whole notion of protecting family. Many years ago, again, true story, two of my cousins broke into my sister's apartment. She was married. So they broke into their cousin's apartment and they robbed her. Well, another family trait, they weren't all that bright. And they left behind lots of evidence and they were caught in what they were doing. And my sister at that time was just vehement. And she was dead set on pressing charges. And my dad stepped in and interceded and said, no, you're not going to do that. Their family. But let's take a closer look at this idea of blood being thicker than water. I don't know if that's something that is inherent to us or if that's something that's drilled into us when we are really young kids. I just know that it holds true. It's a universal principle throughout the entire world. Family is stressed as a high priority. Family is something that is first and foremost to be honored. It's something that takes precedence over race, religion, politics, economics, or whatever. And historically, there's a really sound practical basis for this, because historically, families absolutely had to come together and stay together for the pure purpose of survival. And if you think about it, it's only been made within the last 75 years of human history that mobility, sociologically, mobility has become somewhat of an option that has been greased a little bit by technology. And more kids move out of the house prior to getting married and set up shop someplace else. So what this means is that more than ever, being part of a family is becoming a matter of choice rather than circumstance. Our biological kinships are powerful and beautiful, and they should be honored and they should be preserved. But in some ways, our biological kinships pale in comparison with those times in which we decide to enter into a relationship with somebody and establish a bond. For example, they pale in comparison for me standing up and deciding to be a husband. And maybe for some of you, they pale in comparison for you getting up and deciding to be a wife. And they pale in comparison if we decide to be brother or sister to any person or any group of persons. Again, I don't wish to minimize our physical, biological families. All I'm saying is that when family becomes a matter of choice, and you make that choice, there's something there that is of some greater value than just sharing spiritual DNA. Because by putting ourselves out there and establishing our presence for somebody else and opening ourselves up to the risk of being vulnerable, it's a connection on a much deeper level. A decision to love somebody is a strong affirmative yes to that inner call that we hear, that call that emanates, that comes from the depths of our very souls. Friends and relatives of mine, the last few months, I get the same question a lot. Hey, how's it going out there at Fox Valley? How's the ministry thing going? My response is always pretty much the same. I'm really glad they did it. I'm really very happy here. I believe that the consciousness of this church, of this ministry, is far and away greater than anything that I have encountered anywhere else in Unity and any other churches. I sincerely mean that. But what really impresses the living hell out of me is I've witnessed in the past 5+ months when people here have been in trouble or difficulty of any kind for health or any other reason, people don't have to be asked. They just respond. And if they find out that the fact, oh my God, I didn't realize that. I didn't know that. I don't know if you realize it or not, but when you engage in that and in this family of Unity of Fox Valley, you're doing so by decision. It's not something that you were born into. And when you come here, whether it's to participate in a Sunday service or a class or whatever, the healing services, singing as part of our choir, nobody's paying you. You know, I got to come. They're paying me. You're doing it because of a decision that is stemming from your heart. One of my favorite gospel stories can be found both in the Gospels of Matthew and Luke. And very simply, Jesus is busy teaching with a group of people. And the gist of it is that somebody says, hey, yo, Jesus, your mother and your brother are outside waiting for you. And Jesus kind of reacts by going, and he answers the question, who is my mother and who is my brother? And his answer is, who is signing on to their spiritual childhood with me in love of the Father and in response to the Father? That really is my mother, and that really is my brother. I want to share a little bit of good news with you. Last week, I attended the Unity Convention outside of Kansas City. And without going into the details, because they're unimportant here, for the past 25 years, there really have been two governing bodies in Unity. Because at one point, they couldn't get along on something. But now they're occupying the same campus at the Village, and at the convention last week, they announced a commitment, a dual commitment, to become united again in unity, with a promise and a pledge that there are no sacred cows. And can the wheels come off of this whole thing and it all fall apart? Absolutely. Historically, is there some basis for being skeptical? Absolutely. I think it's going to happen. Because I was really impressed with the choice that they had made and allowed themselves to be vulnerable as individuals and organizations in order to get this done. And so I ask you, in your prayers, keep our movement in mind. Frankly, it was something that reinvigorated me in terms of the unity movement and reinvigorated me then in a very different way, you know, extending to my ministry here at this church. The value of family runs throughout the scriptures. In the Hebrew Bible, there are numerous accounts of covenants, agreements between God and God's people. And on God's part, there's usually a twofold commitment. I will give you land as far as the eye can see, and I will give you descendants, family, more numerous than the stars in the heavens. That agreement, that covenant, and those promises are available to us today. And that promise of land as far as the eye can see is a promise that you will be fed, you will be nurtured, you will be taken care of as you continue along this earthly plane. And the promise of descendants is the promise of family. You don't have to do this alone. In all that we have to do to avail ourselves to these two promises is show up and acknowledge and affirm, I'm here. Yes, I am a divine loved son or daughter of spirit. And yes, I'm willing to look at everybody else in the eyes and embrace you and acknowledge you as brother or sister. And that is absolutely all that there is to it. Everything else just falls into place. Our dysfunctions then become tools which help bring us further awareness and further consciousness of just how wonderful being part of a family can be. Living in Chicago area, it's really difficult at night to see the stars because of light pollution. Metaphysically, sometimes we can't see our human family also because of pollution. Our vision gets polluted by our prejudices and our preconceived ideas and notions about other people and how the world works. We allow ourselves not to see one another because our skin is a different color, because our social class is a different color, because our politics are different, because our religions are different, because our ages are different, because our sexual orientations are different. And on and on and on it goes. But we can see through all of this, and we can see beyond our prejudices. We could choose instead to focus on the spiritual truth that in our hearts, we are all one and the same. And we could come together and challenge those situations like we saw happening in Texas last week. We can challenge those situations that play upon our fears and thrive upon our fears. We can challenge those situations which try to state an argument that our differences from one another are dangerous. And we can challenge those situations which try to deny the reality that we are brothers and sisters. And so we could opt instead to make other choices. We can follow the lead of the students in Parkland, the high school students who basically demanded we got to start taking care of one another. We can choose to be family. We could choose to be there for one another, and we could extend that to any level in which we are ready. I believe you're choosing it already to some extent in this church, in this ministry. How far you extend it after that? It's going to be a function of a lot of things. First and foremost, your own consciousness, your own determination. Secondly, the amount of love and support you get from those that you have already embraced as brothers and sisters. So I'm going to ask a couple of things of you this morning. We're going to do something that we usually don't do in Unity, and we usually don't do at this church. We're going to have a communion service in just a moment or two. So a couple things about it. First of all, if for any reason whatsoever you're not comfortable participating, you know, that's okay. It's just absolutely fine. Secondly, the elements that we're using are pretty harmless. We have regular bread and we have gluten-free bread. And we're not working with wine, we're working with grape juice. So I invite you to come and partake upon that in just a moment. Also, theologically, not making any claims about converting these elements into anybody's body or blood through some magical hocus-pocus. In the Catholic world, that's called transubstantiation. Instead, I'm going to ask you to consider something else, and that is transignification. And the difference of that is what you bring to this table changes the significance of what it is that we share together by virtue of our love and care and commitment to one another. I invite you to think about that and really the implications that are involved in that. You know, we're very careful not to take oaths or make vows about stuff willy-nilly. So what I'm suggesting to you this morning, that as we do this, you're really making a statement of love and care for one another. And again, depending on wherever you are in your hearts and in your heads, you could extrapolate that outside the walls of the sanctuary and as much as you really want to in the world.